Let's go back and translate for a while. This is the introduction. Recite the discourse, most artistic of all natural expressions elucidated. Explain the order by which existence evolves to perfection by the straightest path. By offering our own soul, we have become merged completely into the delight of perception. Again and again, we circumambulate with respect to those who have become shining lights before us. From the single point, three angles and eight other triangles, followed by 10 triangles within and without, then 14 angles, there are 8 petals of a lotus, again followed by 16. These support 3 circles, 3 demarcations of existence with 4 doors, the Bhupara. This is known as the Sri Chakra, the expression of the highest divinity. Does anyone have a Sri Chakra yantra here?
It's on the altar.
On the altar. It's a baby one. You can't all see it so clearly. But here, just take a look at that. You can see from the single point at 3 angles and 8 other triangles, followed by 10 triangles within and out, and then 14 angles. We're describing the yantra. Now, we'll also describe all the deities that go on the yantra. That's another text.
Should the 4 be up and the 5 be down?
It depends on how we were worshiping.
Because we had it the opposite way. Shivadasha turned it around.
You can have a 5 above and 4 below will be Kadi Vidya. 5 will be up and 4 will be down. That will be the Kadi Vidya.
Any other?
The others will be equal. So that there's 4 and 4 with 1 in the center. And that's how the yantra often is depicted. So here we have a description of the yantra. And we're going to get more into the worship of the yantra a little later in the text. Purva Bhag, the preface. Agastya asked, thank you very much. I agree. The Lord, who is an ocean of compassion to devotees, allow me to hear that which is the ultimate to be heard. You have told me the secrets of the 1,000 names. Now tell me only of that which is beyond that with a certainty will bring victory over the manifestations of my consciousness. O Master, about what other objective could I desire to hear?
Swami?
Yes.
Can I give a little history here?
Sure, go ahead.
You know, he had won the boon because of his devotion to Divine Mother. Divine Mother had her attendants, 7 attendants, create the Lalita Sahasrana, and that was given to him. And he had great, it was said he had great peace from that, but he still was not completely fulfilled. And so, because of his additional devotion, she personally revealed this knowledge directly. And with that, he got perfect peace. His all desires were fulfilled.
This is Agastya Muni. This is historical.
Right. Kumbhaja. He was born from a jar. I guess so.
Original test tube baby.
Yeah.
Is it true?
That's right. Actually, he was born from the pot, from the Kailash, just as all divine things are able to be withdrawn from the Kailash, from the pot. Agastya was Kumbhaja. He also was born from the pot.
Doesn't high agreement mean horse face?
Yes, that's right.
A
horse face, the Ashwa was always, the horse was always the one who knew the way home. He was swift and he knew the way home. He could always find his way home. You ever see a barn sour horse? They all return to the barn, no matter where you leave them. And the Ashwa has always, the horse has always symbolized those who know the way home to God. Know the way back to God. The desire, the incessant desire to return to godliness swiftly is the horse.
Is the horse also the senses?
Not necessarily. Now, he's in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the senses are like unruly horses, uh-huh. And the mind are the reins. Take the hold of the reins and control your horses. That was the allegory, the analogy that Krishna gave in the Bhagavad Gita. But not the same as the ashwa, the horse which knows its way home and which always is kind of, he won't rest until he gets there. Mm-hmm. He's the swift-footed one moving towards godliness. He knows he's come into an embodied state, and his only purpose is to return to God. And that's the symbol of the horse all throughout our literature. Uchaisravas is the horse of wisdom. You'll find him in the fifth chapter of Chandi. He was produced when the gods and demons churned the nectar, churned the milk ocean. They were trying to make the nectar of immortal bliss. And Uchaisravas came out, the horse of wisdom. And he knew right where he was going. He had to go home. Hmm. He had to manifest wisdom in his every action. And he would not rest until he could do so. So Hayagriv is the embodiment. He's got the body of a man with the head of a horse. And that means all of humanity has the capacity to act with wisdom and return directly to their place of origin. Please.
This quest for return that we're all aspiring to. When we talk about the conjunction of Shiva and Shakti as the cause of all existence and all of manifest existence being the manifestation of Lalita, from whence does the confusion or the avidya or the suffering arise that requires us to return?
Well, you know what? When you came out of your mother's womb, the first thing they did was slap you on your backside. Said, take a deep breath. You're here. You started with pain. The pain of separation. And as soon as we have that pain of separation, we have that apprehension of Maya being the illusion which obscures the reality. And now here I am clothed in the darkness of ignorance because I think I'm separate. And all of society are teaching me to be separate. And every one of my well-wishers is teaching me to be a self-sufficient individual. Mm-hmm. Not a part of the cosmic whole. They're teaching me to be an individual separate from the cosmic whole. Now this happened from day one of our existence in this form. So through all of this conditioning, we have become accustomed, habituated to think of ourselves as separate God and separate from the universe. And now we have this quest to go back to that state of unity.
Okay. But that somewhat, if I may say, begs the question, because it seems that the root of this problem is deeper than simply social conditioning or even the incarnation in this one form.
Right.
So from whence arises the initial slap on the butt?
Duality.
From whence arises the duality?
Yeah.
The suffering.
Well, all duality has suffering. So from whence arises the duality? And that is inherent in Shiva and Shakti. Shakti's inclination, Prakriti, her inclination is to manifest. And as soon as she manifests something apart from Shiva, something that separates Shiva and Shakti, mm-hmm. then the duality arises. It's inherent in manifested existence.
Yes.
It is inherent in manifested existence.
So it starts right from the very beginning.
As soon as you have two. As soon as you have two.
Because you always have opposites.
That's right.
In order to have relativity, you have to have opposites. So
right.
And up and down.
But thank you.
It's always two, right? Isn't it always three? I mean, you know, isn't that a continuum? It's always...
The one is two, and the two is three.
Right, and it's always, it's constant.
You know? Yes.
But that seems almost tragic if this is a divine...
It doesn't have to be tragic. It could be a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah.
But yet, if suffering is inherent, that sounds as if suffering is somehow inherent in the Godhead, in our Tandar.
In our tradition, we say that suffering is the teacher and pain, pleasure is the examination. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it is inherent.
It is.
And it's part of the school of life. We will go through the school of life, whether you enjoy it or not. You will enjoy the fruits of your karma, whether you like it or not.
Swami, it seems like something greater does get manifest in the whole process of creation. That is, ultimately, divinity creates something that appreciates itself. And so that's something greater than what you had before in recognizing the divinity.
Yeah.
Then it's got, and it's like it creates its own,
Speaking of mother and sheep, its own admirer.
Yes, bring it forward. No, bring the chair. Put it there. Thank you. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, I came right down.
Oh, yes, you did. You're not late for class at all. Mother, any time you come is the right time. There's never an inappropriate time for Srima to enter.
But yet, Swami, here, as taking birth as humans, Ma says this is the greatest birth.
Yes.
Whereas if we took birth as angels or devas, then we'd have a lot of fun, but we wouldn't make much growth.
You wouldn't take birth as a deva. You already are a deva. You already are a deva, and devas have consumed the nectar of immortal bliss. So you'll never die. And the God within you will never die. So that's why taking birth in a human form is the highest birth, because we have the capacity to remember that. And many other species don't have so much capacity. They're not endowed with such capacity to remember that they are divine all the time. And that's why they're here in these bodies. Some of them are accustomed to relating to life in what we call pashubhav, the attitude of an animal, the attitude which tries to satisfy the basic desires and instincts. And very few other species have the privilege of sitting around and having satsang and studying scripture and remembering and reminding each other that we're all God and goddesses and we're divine and in this divine temple sharing divinity in satsang.
Nitya karma.
Thank you. Boy, you've been studying.
So translate nitya karma.
Go ahead, translate.
It's the karma it's the action that's always present. You know, there's four kinds of karma. You have the what's past, what's present right now, and then the arrows have been shot that haven't landed yet.
Could you tell us what those are in Sanskrit, Priya?
Yes?
That's which one?
That's the karma that we that's the result of what we've acted upon in the past, and we're now enjoying the fruits of.
Okay, good. Yes, very good. Yes. Vartman. Vartman. Yes. There are four kinds of karmas. Sankshipta karma. They had 1,500 miles to learn this. just to review. Sankshipta karma is past, over, done with. It exists only as a memory. There's nothing that we have to do about it and nothing except we remember it. Vartman is what's happening. The present. Prarabdha. Those karmas, Shankaracharya and Prem Prakash together, they told the parable of the arrow leaving the bow. That once that arrow has gone forth from the bow, there's nothing that the archer can do but watch. And when it lands, then the archer will act again. And those are the karmas that are commenced in the past, which the fruits of which are coming in the future. So there's past karma, there's present karma, and there's future karma.
And you can burn the future karma through yajna and meditation, yes?
Nitya karma is the fourth karma. It's eternal. Now, generally, what happens, the past karma is over and done with. There's nothing to do about it. Present karma is what is making our future. Nitya karma is eternal. It's always true. And that is generally what we call Siddhantachara, the behavior according to the scriptures. Puja, Pat, Homa, Sangeet, Nrit, Pravachan, Arpana. Worship, reciting the scriptures, making the fire ceremony, the sacred fire, singing for God, dancing for God, explaining what we're doing and what it means, and serving each other with love and generosity. These seven aspects, these seven activities are karma yoga. This is nitya karma, eternal karma. Because if you did it 1,000 years ago, you do it today, it's the same. It doesn't have any reference to time, place, or circumstance. It's just eternal. Anytime you go into meditation, you go into an eternal space. Now, if we fill up our present with eternal karma, then when those arrows land, we're busy. We're not interested. And those arrows just don't have any effect on us. Normally, when we get the arrow lands, there's an immediate reaction. Ouch!
And another arrow goes out.
And we send off another arrow. As soon as we send off another arrow, then we gotta wait for that one to land. Etc., etc., etc. And now, when we fill our present with eternal karma, this nitya karma, this karma yoga, the activities which bring us into union with God, which is timeless, then those arrows land, and who could care less? I'm busy. There's a knock on the door. There's no one home. Otherwise engaged. Please.
So, Swamiji, is that what, when we talk about having the karma barbecue?
Yes.
We're really not talking about that we're somehow burning karma. It's that we're just otherwise engaged, so that when the arrow lands, it's like it just.
We burn the karma.
Is it both?
Same thing. We're otherwise engaged. The karma got went in the fire with the rest of my attention. All that old karma goes into the barbecue, and we serve it up to God. Well done.
So if you're doing it all the time, then you wouldn't be creating any more.
You wouldn't be creating any more karma. You would just be eternally in a state of karma yoga. Now remember, in the Vedas, there are two sections. One is called Karmakund, one is called Gyanakund. The Gyanakund are the prescriptions of wisdom and unity of the soul with the Supreme Being. The Karmakund are the prescriptions of how to put the soul in that harmony. What do you do practically? Puja, Pat, Homa, Sangeet, Nrit, Pravachan, Arpana. These seven. We do them every day in Devi Mandir family. We start the day with worship. We recite the scriptures. We do a fire ceremony. We sing. We dance. We talk about what it means and why we're doing it, which is what we're doing right now. And then we eat. And that's the rhythm of life. The rhythm of the flow of life. Nitya karma. And the more we move towards nitya karma, the less attraction the worldly karma has to us. The less bondage we have to the worldly karma. We get to sit up here and enjoy our mountaintop. I mean, really, with satsang.
We'll not leave world.
None of us ever leaves the world. The world leaves us. We're just busy. We've got our own agenda. The Prarabdha karma knocks on the door. There's no one home. It goes away. We don't go away. We stay here with God. And that's what the nitya karma is. Shall we go back to the text? Tell me, what is the cause of this? Again, how is wisdom manifest? Tell me how consciousness cognizes existence, that united with your words I may offer respect. Measure out, put some limit on both of your infinite feet, O playful mother with raised breast. To this horse's head, high aggrieve, this world is extremely fearful, extremely fearful. What is this? What is this without end? These are high aggrievous questions. Very similar to our own.